Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to talk about that $5.8 million Ferrari case out of Arkansas. In the years I've been doing Leto's Law on YouTube and iTunes, this is the case I've gotten the most questions about. I've had people emailing me the last few days, bombarding me with requests saying, please, Steve, explain to us what happened in Arkansas. And just like when I say I hear a wacky case of North Carolina, when someone says, explain to me what happened in Arkansas, I have to tell you, I don't know if I can, but I'll try. So in case you didn't hear, a jury in Arkansas has ordered a dealership to pay a man $5.8 million for a defective Ferrari, used Ferrari, that they sold him. And it's an interesting case for a whole bunch of reasons, not just that eye-popping jury award, because much of that is punitive damages. So here I'm getting the story from Automotive News, but I've seen it many, many other places, including my good friends at Jalopnik covered it. I'm sure RoadandTrack.com has covered it. Strangely, neither of them called me for comment. But I digress. I will explain to you what happened and why there's a single piece of paper, by the way, that I think cost that dealership $5.8 million. Dealerships and dealership attorneys in Arkansas, listen up. So after a jury's fraud judgment, an eye-popping $5.8 million award over the sale of a used Ferrari, an Arkansas dealership is now arguing that the punishment does not fit the alleged misdeed or the law. This is David Mueller's article out of Automotive News. After the jury's fraud judgment, Virginia resident Hamid Adeli sued Mercedes-Benz of Northwest Arkansas for fraud and several other causes of action over his purchase of a used Ferrari. A jury awarded him $6,835 in actual damages and $13,366 in incidental damages and $5.8 million in punitive damages. The Bentonville, Arkansas dealership, part of the Superior Automotive Group, is appealing the September verdict as out of touch with precedent and constitutional law, saying the verdict shocks the conscience. Superior is seeking to reduce the punitive damages award from $5.8 million to, say, $27,000 or so, or about four times the compensatory award of $6,835. So we're talking math here, right? Okay, so the jury says, look, you owe the guy $6,800 for what you did to him, and to punish you, $5.8 million. And the argument is whether or not the $5.8 million's got to be somehow related mathematically to the amount of actual damages. Some courts have said it should be a multiplier. Some courts have just said it's whatever you have to do to punish somebody. And there's some arguments about that we can go on all day about. But the real issue here is the man bought a 2007 Ferrari F430. He bought it in 2016. So the first thing you notice is it's a 9-year-old car. This is a used car. So one of the funny things I have to deal with when I talk to people in my office about what I do is they'll call me up and say, Steve, I bought a car. I go, what type of car? And they go, Ford Explorer. I go, what year is it? And they go, 2005. When'd you buy it? Last year. Okay, it's used. And one of the first things you have to determine when you're talking about cars is, are they new or used? Because new cars have got one set of laws. Used cars have a different set of laws. There might be an overlap if you do a Venn diagram, but we're talking a used car here. So this man's automobile purchase is not a lemon law case. It's got to be something else because it was a used car. So it's a 2007 Ferrari F430 purchased in 2016. Now, here's the thing. The man broke a bunch of my rules. And I'm not going to fault him for that because you have to say, Steve, he won. He got a $5.8 million verdict. He's doing something right, right? So I'm not saying if you break my rules, you'll never win. But the man broke several of my rules because, among other things, he bought the car without ever visiting the dealership. He relied entirely on phone calls, text messages, and video chats with dealership personnel. He did this over the internet. And I've done entire podcasts saying don't buy cars strictly over the internet. You've got to still do everything you did back in the old days before we had the internet, including go out and look at the car with your own eyeballs, get in it and drive it with your own limbs. Mercedes-Benz of Northwest Arkansas put the Ferrari through a pre-purchase inspection at a Ferrari dealership in Plano, Texas. And this is one of the things that will come back to haunt them. The dealership told the guy buying the car, we had it sent out for a pre-purchase inspection. It had some repairs done. We took care of it for you. Okay? That sounds like a good thing, but I've said before, if you're going to buy a car, don't trust the dealership to inspect it for you. Of course they're going to find that things went well. You want your own person to inspect it. Adeli agreed to buy the F430 for $90,000, and the dealership shipped it to a location a few miles from the mortgage banking professional's home in Fairfax, Virginia. Now, again, I'd like to point out that the jury verdict in his favor was for the grand total. I'm looking around here because I thought I had four pieces of paper, but I think I've only got three. But I believe that one of the numbers was $6,835, $6,800. So of the $90,000 purchase price, when he sued, a jury said, well, you've been harmed by $6,835. It's not even 10%. So it's actually a very small award if you think about it just in that sense, okay? So what happened after the purchase that made that $6,000 repair or problem become a multi-million dollar punitive award? That's the issue here, okay? So on the short drive from the delivery site to home, Adeli reported smelling gas. I'm assuming they mean gasoline. And the odor worsened overnight as the car sat in the garage at his home. The next morning, after talking to a sales manager at the Mercedes store, he had the car towed to a dealership in Maryland, which is a very well-known Ferrari dealership. And there, Adeli was told about allegedly undisclosed issues, including a leaky fuel pump, suspension problems, and a cracked exhaust manifold. Okay, and that exhaust manifold is actually what becomes the key problem here. After Superior declined to pay for the issues, arguing the car was sold as is, and in working order based on its inspection, Adeli sued for breach of warranty, fraud, and deceptive trade practices. And the case went to a jury trial. Now, before we get to the jury trial, though, I've got to tell you that there was actually something much more interesting. And anybody who wants to, and I know there's two or three people in the audience who do, can follow up and do the exact same thing I did. And you can find the motions that were filed in the case of Adeli versus Silver Star Automotive, Inc. They're online. And you can read the opinion written by the judge. And I'm assuming this is a pre-trial motion, but there's an opinion and order of the court. And it says, before the court are cross motions for summary judgment. Both sides, in essence, filed requests with the court saying, there's nothing to fight over here. The facts are not in dispute. The defendants say, throw the case out because we sold the car as is with no warranties. And the plaintiff is saying, no, we should just deserve to win because the facts are so egregious in our favor. And the judge basically granted some of the motions, denied some of the motions. But the most important thing here is the issue about what does it mean to sell a car as is. And I have talked about as is disclaimers on this channel to the point where I know some people are sick of hearing about it. But the reason it's important is that no one understands this stuff, including, I would argue, possibly the judge who wrote this opinion. But the judge wrote the opinion in such a way that it kind of sidestepped the main issue. But here's the point. There's no question this Ferrari was sold as is. The man who bought it and bought it sight unseen as is, no question, he bought it as is, still won. And the federal court judge who oversaw this proceeding said, yes, I recognize that the man bought it as is, but that does not absolve the seller of all wrongs. And that's one of the things that I'm hammering on this channel, is that as is simply means you disclaimed the warranty of implied warranty merchantability, nothing else. And you can't disclaim express warranties. And that comes up in this case. So it's actually funny. So we have to go back and look at this motion. So both sides filed documents, filed uncontested issues. They said, here's what we agree on. Make your ruling. So the judge explains the background and he says, on November 7th, 2016, plaintiff Hamid Adeli contacted the defendant to inquire about a used 2007 Ferrari F430. The parties engaged in back and forth discussions, which ultimately culminated in the purchase of the Ferrari in November 2016. Prior to the sale, defendant engaged Boardwalk Ferrari, a third party, to conduct a pre-purchase inspection of the car. During that inspection, the inspector recommended that the dealership have the exhaust headers repaired. And the defendant dealer declined that. And so there's a piece of paper somewhere in these files that says, third party says exhaust header's bad, and the dealership says, don't bother fixing it. during the conversations between plaintiff and defendant, defendant's employees described the Ferrari as being in turnkey excellent condition. They also said a pre-purchase inspection had been performed and all necessary repairs had been completed. Well, that statement's not true because they hadn't completed the repair of the header. They did not even mention the exhaust headers in their conversations back and forth. Gee, I wonder why that is. So among the documents related to the transaction, here's where all of you dealership attorneys in the audience, I know there's seven of you, maybe eight, you need to pay very close attention because there's something missing here. Among the documents related to the transaction were an invoice, an odometer disclosure statement, a check, a notice that Arkansas has no cooling off or cancellation period, a buyer's guide acknowledging the car is purchased as is, and that's it. Well, you have to understand an odometer disclosure statement is required by federal law. The buyer's guide is required by federal law. The cooling off period is probably required by state law. And there was an invoice. But the problem is that most dealerships I deal with in Michigan have standard purchase agreements. And it looks to me like something was missing from that invoice. Because most purchase agreements in Michigan that I see have integration clauses that say quite specifically on them, every agreement that the buyer and the seller make is reduced to the four corners of this document, whether it's the front or the back. If it's not on this document, it doesn't count. Because what you're about to hear now is how much the judge likes the stuff that wasn't on this document. And I suspect there was no integration clause. And I think that's what sunk the dealership. But we'll get back to the story. So shortly after taking possession of the car, plaintiff began to smell gasoline emitting from the car, took it to the mechanic, and the mechanic then discovered the problem of the fuel pump and a leaky exhaust manifold. So he files an action in Virginia District Court. There's some hemming and hawing back and forth, and the case apparently winds up down in Arkansas because there's a three-page discussion on choice of laws and venue. I'm not going to get into that now, but they wind up in an Arkansas court, okay? And so again, like I said, I'm reading this straight from the case of Hamid Adeli versus Silver Star Automotive, and this is in the United States District Court, Western District of Arkansas. So that's how the case wound up down there. And the biggest issue here is breach of express warranty. And most people think of express warranties as the glove box warranty. You buy a brand new car, you open the glove box, and there's a booklet in there that says, here's what your warranty is. 336, 550, 772, whatever it is. And you know, we'll fix these things if they break in this time period. That's a glove box warranty. An express warranty is any statement that the seller makes regarding the goods of an objective nature that goes to the basis of the bargain that makes you, as a buyer, want to buy those and you rely on that as part of the purchase. And I'm paraphrasing that, trying to put that in plain English for the non-lawyers in the audience. But many things can be warranties. So for instance, if I told you I'm going to sell you a 1965 Mustang and you come out and you buy it and I deliver it to you and it's 1966, you can sue me for breach of warranty because the express warranty I made was it was a 65 and not a 66. And 65 is an objective number. It's measurable. It's different than 66. So an express warranty, it can be a lot of different things. And so here, defendant argues that if they made any express warranties, they disclaimed them because they had a document that said, we disclaim all warranties, express or implied. Now, I've told you how idiotic that is to say, I'm disclaiming my express warranties. If you are, why'd you make them? Okay? So if I tell you I'm making a warranty, but by the way, I disclaim it, it's nonsensical. And most people look at that, that's not even logical. It doesn't make any sense. How do you do that? So that's a problem. So one of the points that the court's going to get at here is they make these express warranties, such as it was inspected and we had all the work done, but then they say, oh, and we disclaim all express warranties. So here the case is plaintiff's argument depends on the as-is provision, and they talk about how it says as-is, no warranty, and it appears in all caps and so on and so forth. And there's no question that this vehicle is sold as-is with no implied warranty merchantability. But the next question is whether the contract between the parties included an express warranty, and if so, whether the express warranty and the disclaimer can be construed as consistent with each other. And that's what I'm getting at. I can't say two things to you that are inconsistent with each other at the same time and say, by the way, you're legally bound by that. So the Uniform Commercial Code, which what governs sales contracts and warranties, talks about when a seller or a warrantor makes conflicting statements, how they get construed. And if the warranty and the disclaimer cannot be construed as consistent, then the disclaimer is ineffective as the express warranty. And the express warranty then becomes operational. So when they said, we checked the car out, it had a pre-purchase inspection, and everything was fixed on it, and here's the receipt to prove that, that's an express warranty. And you can't say, oh, by the way, we disclaim that. Well, you shouldn't have made the statement if you want to disclaim it with the other hand. So the interesting thing I'm going to point to, though, here, and again, all the lawyers who defend car dealerships, there's a sentence in the opinion. No one document agreed to be a final written contract of sale. And that's the problem here. Because the dealership, in the cases I see all the time, routinely say, this purchase agreement governs the sale. If it's not written here, it doesn't count. And I've seen countless judges look at that and go, you know something? You can't claim that you were made a promise if it wasn't written on this piece of paper, because you signed this piece of paper saying, I agree, everything's on this piece of paper. I hate when I see people who've signed that document, but I encounter it all the time. So apparently they don't use those in Arkansas, and it came back to haunt them. So they talk about all these different documents, and among them is a statement that says all the service has been completed. And a reasonable juror could conclude that the parties intended this writing to be incorporated into their final agreement, along with the invoice, buyer's guide, and other documents. Which documents were intended by the parties to represent their final agreement is a dispute of material fact on which the remaining breach of warranty arguments depend. So the court basically said, look, you can't make a bunch of statements that are warranties and then make a bunch of statements that conflict those and then say, oh, by the way, now that we're at trial, we want to pick and choose which ones we like, and you don't get to pick those. And so the judge basically said, well, we're gonna let a jury decide that, and the jury decided that. And apparently the jury got very, very offended when they heard that the car was inspected by somebody who said, it's got a cracked exhaust manifold. And a cracked exhaust manifold, besides being a problem, just in that it doesn't allow the car to run properly, also, I assume, is a safety issue, carbon monoxide and so on. And they got angry about that and said, you know, they knew that and they didn't disclose it. So let's slap them. And they slapped them for $5.8 million. But the real issue here is the dealership didn't use the right paperwork. Whose fault is that? This probably will get knocked down on appeal. If it does, I will do an update on it. For the time being, however, the man who bought the car has got some great leverage to get that thing fixed. But we'll see how it plays out. But that's the story of the $5.8 million verdict out of Arkansas. And like I said, I believe a single piece of paper would have fixed that. And that would be a simple integrated purchase agreement. But we'll see how that goes. Questions or comments, fire my way. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.